Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Whiskey 8 Mike Whiskey, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at www.scarsvoip.com. There's many net controls this evening. I'm just merely opening it up. My call is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. My name is Kathleen. I'm located in the city of Port St. Lucie, Florida, where we currently have a temperature of 77. It was a high of 79 today, but it's still very, very sunny. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, please come aboard. No emergency traffic, and that's always a great thing. How about anyone celebrating a birthday? Maybe today, maybe this upcoming week, maybe last week, that would like to come aboard so we could say happy, happy. Well, it looks like nobody's getting any older. So this is the monthly Thursday informational net open forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speakers. But I do want to advise all stations connected that the net is going to be recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast, so all stations participating will be part of that recording. And once again, our topic tonight is how amateur radio has changed over the years. Has it been for the better or for the worse? So hopefully you'll enjoy, and like I said, ask questions of those speakers. So with that, I'm going to throw it over to you, Dave, GW8SZL, and for you to take the helm. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Dave, are you there?
K6SUN from GW8SZL. Thank you very much there, Kathy, for opening the TIN for this month of April. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this month's TIN on the SCARS VOIP network. We've got a really interesting topic lined up for you tonight, and it's one that just about every operator can relate to, no matter how long you've been licensed or how long you've actually enjoyed the hobby. Tonight, we're going to be looking at how amateur radio has changed over the years and whether those changes have been for better or for worse. Now, this isn't just about looking back and comparing the past with the present. It's really about understanding how the hobby has evolved from the early days of experimentation and home-built equipment, right through to the modern world of digital modes, software-defined radios, and global connectivity. Along the way, we'll touch on changes in equipment, operating styles, licensing, and the way we connect with each other as a community. So as you listen along this evening, you might find yourself reflecting on your own journey in amateur radio and how things may have changed since you first got started. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the program. And we'll get things underway by bringing in our first narrator, and that is Declan, 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel, who is with me here in Newport, South Wales in the UK. 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. This is 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. So, the origins and early spirit of amateur radio. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's SCARS VOIP Thursday Information Net. It is great to have you all with us, and we hope you will find tonight's topic both interesting and thought-provoking. This evening, we are going to be exploring a subject that often brings out a wide range of opinions, experiences, and memories. Our topic tonight is how amateur radio has changed over the years, for better or for worse. And that's a big question, and it's one that does not have a simple answer. For some operators, amateur radio today is more exciting, more accessible, and more capable than it ever has been. For others, though, there is a feeling that something important from earlier days might have been lost along the way. And, of course, many of us probably sit somewhere in the middle. What makes this topic particularly interesting is that every operator brings their own perspective. Some of you may have been licensed for many decades and have seen several waves of change firsthand. Others may be relatively new and only know amateur radio as it exists today. So as we go through tonight's discussion, there's really no right or wrong viewpoint, just different experiences to share. To begin, let's take a step back and look at the early days of amateur radio. In those early years, radio was not quite the hobby we recognize today. It was much more closely tied to experimentation and discovery. In fact, many early operators wouldn't have thought of themselves as hobbyists at all, but rather experimenters, exploring something new and not yet fully understood. There were no modern transceivers, no digital displays, and certainly no ready-made stations that you could simply plug in and use. If you wanted to get on the air, you would have had to build your equipment yourself. That might mean winding coils by hand, assembling components one piece at a time, and then carefully testing and adjusting everything until it worked, or at least worked well enough to produce a signal. And even then, success was not guaranteed. Things didn't always behave the way you expected, and troubleshooting could take hours or even days, but that was all part of the experience. Because of this, early amateur radio operators developed a very strong connection with their equipment. They didn't just use their radios, they understood them, often in great detail. If something went wrong, they couldn't simply replace a unit and send it off for repair. They had to diagnose the problem themselves and find a solution. That process built not only technical skill, but also patience and persistence. And for many operators, that hands-on aspect became one of the most rewarding parts of the hobby, was learning from others. There wasn't the wealth of information we have today. No online videos, no discussion forums, no instant access to manuals or guides. Instead, knowledge was shared directly between people. If you were new to amateur radio, you would spend a lot of time listening both on the air and in person. You may visit another operator's shack, watch how they operated, ask questions, and gradually build up your own understanding. Clubs played an important role in this. They weren't just social gatherings, they were places where people learned together. More experienced operators often took the time to guide newcomers, passing on practical knowledge that you simply couldn't get from book alone. And that kind of mentorship created strong connections within the amateur radio community. And of course, we can't talk about early amateur radio without talking about Morse code. For a very long time, Morse was at the heart of amateur communication, especially for long-distance contacts. Learning Morse wasn't something you picked up overnight. It required regular practice, concentration, and a fair amount of determination. But once learned, it became a very effective and reliable mode of communication. In fact, Morse could often get through what voice signals could not. Many operators found that Morse had its own unique rhythm and character. It wasn't just about sending information, it was about how that information was sent. Even today, there are operators that will tell you that a Morse contact can feel more personal in some ways than voice communication. Another thing that's worth considering is the level of commitment required to become an amateur operator in those earlier days. Equipment could be expensive or difficult to obtain, and licensing requirements were often more demanding than they are today. This meant that being licensed was a significant achievement. People invested their time and effort into learning, practicing, and preparing for exams, and when they finally received their license, there was a real sense of accomplishment. That sense of achievement often translated into a strong respect for the hobby and for other operators. Operating itself also tended to be a slower and more relaxed experience. Contacts were often longer, and conversations could cover a wide range of topics. It wasn't unusual for operators to spend quite a bit of time getting to know each other over the air. Amateur radio, in many ways, served as a social network long before that term existed. It allowed people to connect across distances, share experiences, and build friendships. And for some, especially those in more isolated areas, it provided a very important link to the outside world. At the same time, amateur radio developed a reputation for being more than just a hobby. Operators were often called upon to assist during emergencies, providing communication when other systems were unavailable or had failed. That ability to step in and help when needed became an important part of amateur radio's identity, and something that continues to this day. Now, as we reflect on all of this, it is easy to look back and feel a sense of nostalgia for those early times. And that is completely understandable. But it is also important to remember that every period in amateur radio has had its own challenges and limitations. The operators of the past worked with the tools and knowledge available to them, just as we do today. So perhaps instead of asking whether things were better back then, we might ask a slightly different question. How have those early experiences shaped amateur radio that we know today? And as the hobby continues to evolve, what aspects of that early spirit do we want to carry forward? Now, before I pass things along to the next narrator, I would like to invite you to think about your own experiences. If you've been licensed for some time, what changes stand out most to you? And if you're newer to the hobby, what attracted you to amateur radio in the first place? Now, at this time, I would like to ask for any check-ins, questions, comments, or personal thoughts at this stage of the Thursday Information Network Open Forum. This is 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. Okay, this is 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. Do we have any check-ins, questions, comments, or personal thoughts for this stage of the Thursday Information Net before we turn over to the next narrator? This is 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel.
Golf Mike Zero, Uniform, Uniform Bravo. Graham here in Alloa, Central Scotland.
Okay. Golf Mike Zero, Uniform, Uniform Bravo from 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. Well, welcome in. And what would you like to say at this stage from 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel?
Well, thank you so much, Declan. I just want to say thank you for doing what you did and for starting off the wonderful night here and everything else. Looking forward to all the various information that's going to be shared and everything else. But, you know, Declan, just got a quick comment. I mean, as the years have gone by, I was first licensed back in 1992. And, of course, then it was all about HF, mainly HF, and CW is my main mode of operation for many, many years. And then things happened and life changes and you move and you do this, you do that. And over recent years, I do miss CW, I have to say. But, you know, the hobby has changed an awful lot for me. Actually, outside, I have no external antennas whatsoever. We brought them down about 2 or 3 years ago, and I have not all up in storage, and HF radio up in storage, everything else. And I miss CW, but I don't miss anything else, I have to say, because I'm so much enjoying all this using, you know, handhelds and other devices and, you know, digital hotspots and, of course, AllStar, where I'm on just now. You got several of those nodes. And so, yeah, the hobby's definitely changed over the years. Yeah, here I am, an amateur radio operator with no external antennas. You know, my neighbours can't say, hey, what's that antenna all about, or what's that aerial all about? So there we go. But I'm enjoying the hobby so much. But yeah, kind of missing CW, I have to say there. But apart from that, I'm very, very happy with all this kind of indoor handheld nodes and the hotspots kind of set up. So there we go. But man, I'll tell you, the options and everything that's out there is quite incredible. Anyway, Declan, great job, sir. I'll throw it back to you, to Whiskey Zero, Kilo Yankee Hotel, nearly his birthday, from GM Zero, UUB.
Okay, thank you very much, Graham, from 2 Whiskey Zero, Kilo Yankee Hotel. And, yeah, I greatly appreciate you coming in here today and checking in with the First Information Map. And thank you for your inputs. I greatly appreciate it. And, yeah, I've got to agree with you. I will say, obviously, in a relatively shorter span of being in amateur radio for me from 2017 until now, in 26, I'm approaching on 9 years being licensed. And I've got to say, there is a lot that we're starting to see, and we have seen in modern years, that have made things a lot easier to run, like you said, even without an aerial, even without an external antenna. So the advent of digital modes makes things quite a lot easier to you know, operate and be able to speak to people across the radio, even if you don't have the sort of external system, which is great, and it's very helpful indeed. And yeah, I completely understand your perspective from being somebody who would use CW quite a lot to being unable to due to the lack of antenna. But yeah, obviously, everything changes, and that does include amateur radio. And your experiences with amateur radio can be much varied between 1 year and the next, between 1 week and the next, even at times. It just really depends on a whole bunch of factors, really. But there's a really vast range of options these days in terms of how you want to operate the radio. And as this net is emphasizing, there is no right or wrong way at all. It is all equally as enjoyable to a whole lot of different people in the amateur radio community. Yeah, this is 2 Whiskey Zero Kilo Yankee Hotel continuing. And, yeah, thank you very much, Graham. And, yeah, indeed, I feel like when I started in amateur radio at a very young age, at the age of 9, where I was starting to understand the world around me a lot more, and I was living my childhood, and now I'm approaching 18, starting to see a lot of things as well, and you compare the sort of world around it, and also amateur radio in itself. A lot of things have changed, a lot of things have developed, even in such a short time span as from the 2010s into the 2020s. So, wonder how things will continue to evolve as we move into the future of amateur radio. That's an interesting thing to think about as well. So, do you have anything further, Graham? GM0UUB from 2 Whiskey Zero Kilo Yankee Hotel.
Oh, thank you, Declan. And nothing much. Just to say, it's one of the big things I do love about amateur radio, especially as we get onto these kind of newer modes and the different ways of operating. I know some of the old timers say it's not real radio and all the rest, but hey, you know, Declan, what I so much enjoy in amateur radio is listening to people like yourself. You know, when you got your license at the age of 9. And you'll be 18 very soon and all the rest. But having youngsters on the air is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And, of course, all these new modes of operations and all the rest, using different devices, different techniques and operations, just inviting young people to get in there as well. Absolutely wonderful. Keeps the amateur radio hobby going. So I just want to say that. That's the only thing I have to add there, sir. Great to hear all you young people on the air. So with that, I'll pass it back to you, sir, and please continue. 2Whiskey0, Kilo Yankee Hotel. Declan, you're amazing. Thank you, sir. GM0, UUB.
Okay, thank you very much, Graham, and you enjoy the rest of your week, and, well, I shall speak to you likely tomorrow. Well, today, technically, now, because we're past midnight, on the KB1 Multimednet. But until then, I will go ahead and say 73 to GM0UUB, and I am going to quickly make another call, just to be sure, and see that if we have any further check-ins, questions, comments, or personal thoughts at this time in the Thursday Information Net, please come aboard with your call sign so that I can get you down, and if I hear nothing, we'll just move along. This is 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel with the Thursday Information Net open forum.
2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel, this is K2HA.
Alright, net control, current narrator recognizes K2HA. That is Fred in Broomall, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Fred, and welcome to this month's TIN. And how are you doing? And what would you like to say from 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel?
2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. This is Fred K. 2HA. Yeah, I could remember when I was about, about eighth grade, I think it was, that I really got hooked onto, started studying for the amateur radio license. Back I was in New York, actually New York City and Queens, and did a lot of listening, shortwave listening, ham radio listening, and then I took the license, got a novice license, and then got myself a transceiver, a Heathkit Sixer. It's the Benton Harbor Lunchbox, they called them, and put that together. It worked fine, and started making CW contacts. We were using crystals back then, no VFOs, and it was an interesting experience using crystals. But there were a lot of them available because left over from World War II, so that was not a problem getting them. Let me reset this K2HA. And, scoured the streets of New York City to find old television sets that people threw out with tremendous amount of good parts in them, took them home and started building ham radio equipment out of them. It was a lot of fun. And I think that's something that new hams today miss, being able to take components from other things and put them together and make a working transmitter and a receiver. It's sad that things have gone into microprocessors, but it's a lot of fun too to play with microprocessors. but it's still not the same as building your own circuits, because the circuits are already there. You're just putting blocks of things together instead of actually putting components together, hooking them up, and making sure that they work. The future of amateur radio, I'm wondering, because it's moving so fast, and there's so many commercial companies that are eyeing our radio spectrum, that they would like to take it away from us. So one of the things I must say is get on the HF. VHF and UHF, use those bands, and so that we can get them crowded, and so they're not available for, you know, empty for the commercial piece. Their hams aren't using those. We need them. So just a point there. Everybody get on the air and make sure you make lots of contacts on over the air. You know, digital is fine. Echolink is great, and All-Star, D-Star, etc. You got to get on over the air. This is Fred, K2HA.
Okay, thank you very much for your comments, Fred. I greatly appreciate it. And, very interesting sort of origins of your personal experience with amateur radio. Getting into it during school years and listening in and taking interest, getting the license and beginning to build parts from scratch is quite an interesting thing that certainly has come from the past of amateur radio before some of the modern developments that have made things a bit easier access, not to say any better or any worse, just easier to access the sort of components, the sort of circuits to be able to set up a station properly, which is very interesting indeed. And, thank you very much for the advice to, really all operators in general, to, get onto the bands and make some HF contacts, make some VHF, UHF contacts on the radio itself. Digital modes, perfectly fine. Digital modes are quite great in my personal opinion. It is quite nice, I think, that people should be continuing to use the bands to make sure that we can preserve the bandwidth that we've had allocated as AM radio operators. So, thank you very much, Fred. Anything further before I move along from 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel?
2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. Okay, Declan, very good. And you did a fantastic job in your narration there. And, I can see you being a broadcaster. I don't know what particular station you could, or what, maybe on television. I don't know. I think you'd make a great a broadcaster. So keep up the good work. This is Fred, K2HA.
Okay, thank you very much, Fred. I greatly appreciate your comments. I greatly appreciate your inputs here. And thank you very much. And now I am going to go ahead and move along with the TIN. And the next narrator here this evening is Dave, Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulima, whom I have been warming up the shack chair for. And now, Dave, it is your time to reclaim the chair and proceed with the TIN. This is 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel, looking for Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulima.
Thank you very much there, Declan, and good evening, everyone. This is Dave, GW8SNL, now sat in a very warm shack chair. And we're now going to move on and talk about the evolution of equipment and technology from hands-on hardware to smart radios. Now, that was a really nice look back at where amateur radio began, and it sets the stage perfectly for what we're going to talk about next. In this section, we're going to focus on something that most of us interact with every time we get on the air, and that's the equipment itself. Because if there's one area where change in amateur radio is immediately visible, it's here. The radios, the accessories, even the way we tune across the band has all evolved quite dramatically over the years. Now let's start by thinking about what a typical amateur radio station might have looked like several decades ago. In many cases, it wasn't a single piece of equipment sitting neatly on a desk. Instead, it was a collection of separate units, each with its own purpose. You might have had a transmitter in one box, a receiver in another, a separate power supply, and perhaps an external modulator. Add to that an antenna tuner, meters, switches, and a fair amount of wiring, and the whole setup could take up quite a bit of space. Operating that kind of station wasn't just a matter of turning it on and speaking into the microphone. There was a process involved. Now, one of the defining features of that era was, of course, the use of vacuum tubes. Tube equipment had its own character. It generated heat, sometimes quite a lot of it, and it required a bit of patience. When you powered up a tube rig, you didn't usually start transmitting straight away. You gave it time to warm up and stabilize. And then came the tuning process. Operators would carefully adjust the controls to achieve the correct output, while keeping everything within safe operating limits. Now that might involve watching meters, listening closely to the signal, and making fine adjustments. It wasn't difficult once you understood it, but it did require attention and a certain level of skill. And if you got it wrong, there was always the risk of damaging something. Because of that, operators became very familiar with how their equipment behaved. They knew what sounded right, what looked right on the meters, and what didn't. That kind of hands-on interaction built confidence, but it also meant you couldn't really operate on autopilot. You had to stay engaged with what you were doing. As time moved on, one of the biggest changes came with the introduction of solid-state electronics. Transistors began to replace vacuum tubes, and that brought several noticeable improvements. Radios became smaller and lighter, which made them more practical for everyday use. They were also generally more reliable and used less power. And perhaps one of the most appreciated changes was that you could switch them on and start operating almost immediately. No warm-up time, no waiting, just power on and go. Around the same time, we also started to see the rise of the integrated transceiver. Instead of having separate transmitter and receiver units, everything was combined into a single piece of equipment. That made station setup simpler and more accessible, especially for newcomers. It also meant that more people could get on the air without needing a deep technical background just to get started. And another important development was improved frequency stability. In earlier equipment, it wasn't unusual for signals to drift slightly, especially as components warmed up or environmental conditions changed. Modern radios, with digital frequency control and synthesis, are incredibly stable by comparison. You can select a frequency and know that you're going to stay exactly where you intended. Now that might seem like a small thing, but it makes operating much more predictable and reduces the chances of unintentionally interfering with other stations. As the technology continued to advance, we began to see the introduction of digital displays and more precise tuning controls. Gone were the days of estimating your position on an analog dial. Now you can see your frequency clearly displayed, often down to the nearest hertz. This level of precision opened up new possibilities, especially for digital modes and weak signal work. Now, speaking of weak signals, one of the most significant developments in more recent years has been the use of digital signal processing, or DSP. DSP allows radios to filter out noise, enhance signals, and improve overall clarity in ways that simply weren't possible before. Now, signals that might have been difficult or impossible to copy in the past can now be received with surprising clarity. This has made operating more accessible, particularly for those who may not have ideal antenna setups or who are dealing with noisy environments. And then we come to what is perhaps one of the biggest changes of all, software-defined radio, or SDR. With SDR, many of the functions that were once handled by hardware are now managed by software. Instead of relying entirely on physical components, the radio uses computer processing to interpret and display signals. Now, this has introduced features like waterfall displays, where you can actually see signals across the band in real time. Now, for many operators, this changes the way they search for contacts. Instead of tuning slowly and listening carefully for signals, you can visually identify activity and move directly to it. For some, this feels like a major improvement. It makes band conditions easy to understand and can be a powerful learning tool. For others, it changes the experience of tuning and listening, which is once a skill in itself. But as with so many changes in amateur radio, it really comes down to how each operator chooses to use the technology. Now, while radios themselves have changed dramatically, it's interesting to note that antennas have remained surprisingly consistent. The basic principles haven't changed. A dipole is still a dipole. A vertical is still a vertical. And the laws of physics continue to apply, just as they always have. But what has changed is how we design and build them. Today, we have access to software that allows us to model antenna performance before we even put anything up. Materials have improved, and there are more options available for portable and compact setups. So while the fundamentals are the same, the tools we use have become more advanced. And another important factor to consider is cost and accessibility. High-end equipment can still be quite expensive, but at the same time, there are more entry-level options available than ever before. Used equipment markets, handheld radios, and simpler setups have made it possible for more people to get started without a large initial investment. Now, that has helped bring new operators into the hobby. Of course, with all this convenience, there's sometimes a discussion about whether something has been lost. When radios do so much automatically, there's less need to understand what's happening behind the scenes, at least at a basic level. Some operators feel that this reduces the hands-on learning that was once such a big part of amateur radio. Others see it as an opportunity, allowing people to get on the air more easily and then explore the technical side at their own pace. And perhaps that's the key point. Technology hasn't removed the opportunity to learn. It's simply changed where that learning takes place. Instead of focusing purely on hardware, many operators today explore software, digital modes, and system integration. The spirit of experimentation is still there, it's just expressed in different ways. So as we think about how equipment has evolved, it's worth asking ourselves, has technology made amateur radio easier, or has it simply made it different? And how much understanding do we really need to enjoy the hobby fully? Okay, I'm looking for any questions, comments, or personal thoughts on the above. And this is GW8SZL. Listening for any stations you'd like to check in also.
W4RFJ.
UDY.
Okay, I recognize W4RFJ, Chief, and Robert, VK2DY. Is there anybody else?
Echo Whiskey Golf.
Okay, I've also got David, KB9EWG. Let's go to Chief, W4RFJ. It's your turn, Chief. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good evening, Dave. Good evening to the net. This is Whiskey 4, Romeo Foxtrot Juliet. And I was looking at the topic being Excuse me just a second. I'm scrolling back up to the top of the script because I can't remember exactly what it is, how amateur radio has changed over the years. And we mentioned Morse code or CW, but we didn't mention the fact that the first amateur radio operations was with spark gap transmitters. And the way you tuned your spark gap transmitter is by the length of your wire. And that's how, historically, the amateurs came up with the 160-meter band, because your antenna had to be 160 meters in order to resonate with that spark gap on 160 meters, and so on and so forth with the other bands, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10. Anyway, I just thought, you know, you got to look at what technologies were available back then, and that was it. You didn't have voice. You didn't have single sideband, but over time, as equipment improved with the military, that also came over to the amateur side of the house. So that's really all I wanted to say. You know, we tend to forget about the early days of amateur radio, and that's back when, you know, you had ship-to-shore CW operators operating on a frequency that was determined by the length of the antenna. Back over to you, Dave, W4RFJ.
W4RFJ from 2W8SL. Okay there, Chief, and thank you very much for mentioning that. Also, there's a lot of history that you can just look up on the internet or find some really old books. I got quite a few here as well, right from the very, very early days. It's a lot of history there, and it's you know, available for people who want to actually look at it in a bit more detail. But do you have anything further at this time, Chief, from GW8SZL?
Nope, nothing else. Just wanted to make it clear that, you know, the history goes back a lot further than when we started in this TIN. But that was just a thought that popped into my head. And I'm just itching to get going with this so I can go fix a dinner.
Yeah, okay there, Chief. Obviously, we do have a time constraint with the TIN as well. But if we were talking about radio right back in the history, we could be here for days on end, I'm sure. But very valid information there. There from your good self. Okay, I'm going to say 7-3 to Chief, and the Chief will be coming up next. Let's go and say hello to Robert, VK2DY down there in Sydney, Australia.
GW8SZL, this is VK2DY, Robert in northwestern Sydney, where it's currently, 21 Celsius, headed for high of 27, and there's a few clouds in the sky, but it looks like it's going to be a mostly sunny day today. So nice mid-autumn day, actually getting late autumn almost. Thank you for the broadcast. I started radio actually in the tube era. My dad was a broadcast engineer, and we did a project together. The first amateur radio I had was a HW101 Heath kit. And my dad was very patiently worked me through constructing it and putting it together. And it was an old valve radio, of course, and so you get the valves in and you put everything together. And yeah, it was a fun project, you know, and I still look back on that fondly, you know, that experience with my father. Yeah, and you're right. It wasn't just turn it on and look at the waterfall, that's for sure. There was a lot of play with it, a lot of work to get it to get in and get signals and find the signals and everything else. So yeah, everything nowadays is very automatic. But again, yeah, as you said, you learn as you go, and you could say if it isn't spark gap, it isn't radio, but going all the way back. But I mean, it evolves. It becomes different, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. On a different note, and I can't do the UTC in my head, but at 8 o'clock this evening, speaking of amateur radio, we have a broadcast of the ARIS contact with a school here in Australia, And they usually, it's usually pretty interesting to listen to it. It usually lasts for about 10 minutes, and they go through contact, the kids ask questions. It's pretty neat, actually speaking. And I don't know where the ground station is for it tonight, but it's interesting to listen to. And if people want, they can tune into the Ham Conference this evening, 8 o'clock Australian Eastern Standard Time. And you're better converting those things than I am. Thank you again, Dave. VK2DY, back to net.
Yeah, VK2DY from GW8SLR, the HW101 as well. I haven't got it anymore, unfortunately. I got a couple of 101s, FT101s, that is, with the tubes. And I do actually use... not on a regular basis, got a Yaesu Fox Tango 902 Delta mic with a 26146Bs, and I think it was a 12BY, I can't remember, 12BY, I can't remember now, as a driver. It is it is 10 to 1 in the morning here. And yes, if you go to the Anzal.radio website, Robert, click on the RS Upcoming Contacts page, which I just called up because I put them there a couple of days ago. It's and it's got the AOS, which is the acquisition of signal, 10:22, 49 seconds UTC. That's 6:22 p.m. AWST, Australian Western Standard Time, I think, maybe. It's 20:22:49 AEST. 68 degrees. The astronaut is Jack Hathaway, Kilo Juliet 5, November India Victor. And it's Telebridges via a station in New Hampshire in the U.S., Fred, Alpha Bravo 1, Oscar Charlie. So that's with Scouts Australia, Western Australia branch, Mount Hawthorn, Western Australia. So there you go there, Robert. It's on the website. So I just really read it off there. Yeah, that's another use of modern radio, isn't it? I'll put you back to you one more time there, Robert, before I go and say hello to David. VK2DY, GW8SNL.
GW8SNL, VK2DY. Yeah, so there's always new things, and the ARIS contacts are fun. They only last about 10 minutes, but you listen to it, and the kids have all practiced their questions, and it's a fun listen. So lots of good stuff in radio still going on and continuing to go on. Thank you again, Dave. VK2DY.
Yeah, VK2DY from GW8 Aston Island. The one in Christchurch, New Zealand, Diamond Harbour School, has been confirmed also. It's the same astronaut. And information is also on that particular page. So thanks once again there, Robert. Let's go and say hello to David, KB9EWG. Welcome to the April TIN there. David, go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, Dave. Well, good evening to you and everybody else on South Cars. You talking about equipment and everything else. You know, I too have witnessed a lot of changes in this hobby since I became licensed, first licensed in 1989. I was then first issued a now no longer issued a novice license. And I made my very first CW contact on HW101. You were talking about the HW101 there. That is a fine radio. Like I said, I made my very first CW contact on HW101. And here I am tonight on one of the latest pieces of equipment here. Definite innovation, the M1KE. It's really amazing how this hobby has gone from, as we said, the spark gap, all the way up to devices like this that, it's got every digital mode in your hand there, so. It's really amazing the change we've seen in ham radio over the years. GW8SZL from KB9EWG.
KB9EWG, GW8SZL. So I forgot to ask Robert this question. So do you think ham radio has changed for better or for worse there, David, before I pass it on to Chief? KB9EWG, GW8SZL.
Well, there are some things that have gone away, the dodo bird that wish would have been, still be around. But I think it's innovating and improving all the time. And if you don't innovate and keep going growing with the hobby, you're just going to turn into a sad habit, they call it there. So Say there's a few things that I miss with the when I first got started, but it's definitely innovating, improving, and changing there. So.
KB9EWG from GW8. Hello, okay there, David. Thanks for those comments, and I concur. There's something in ham radio for everybody. Just got more variety these days. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's go and pass the net over to the chief, my good friend, over there in Rainbow Springs in Florida. That's W4RFJ. It's all yours there, chief. Go ahead, my friend.
Okay. Thank you, Dave, and good evening, everyone. This is Chief W4RFJ, and we're going to talk about operating culture and licensing, the actual changing human side of amateur radio. So far tonight, we've taken a look at where amateur radio began and how the equipment we use has evolved over time. In this section, we're going to shift the focus slightly and talk about something that's a little less tangible, but just as important is the way we operate and how people enter the hobby. Because while technology changes the tools we use, it's the operators themselves who shape the culture of amateur radio. Let's start by thinking about operating styles. If we go back a few decades, amateur radio operating tended to move at a slower, more relaxed pace. Contacts were often longer, and there were more emphasis on conversation. It wasn't unusual for operators to spend quite a bit of time talking about their equipment, their antennas, the weather, or just everyday life. There was no particular rush. Part of that was simply the pace of life at the time. The part of it was also the nature of radio itself. Making a contact could take a bit of effort. And once you had someone on the frequency, it made sense to make the most of it. For many operators, amateur radio was as much about the conversation as it was the contact. As time went on, operating styles began to diversify. Today, there are many different ways to enjoy amateur radio. Some operators still enjoy long rag juice, just as they always have. Others prefer contesting, where the goal is to make as many contacts as possible in a limited time or mode. Some are interested in chasing awards or activating locations, while others focus on digital modes or portable operation. In many ways, amateur radio has become more flexible. You can choose how you want to operate, depending on your interests and the time you have available. That flexibility is generally a good thing, but it can also lead to differences in expectations. For example, someone looking for a relaxed conversation might find themselves on a busy band during a contest weekend where exchanges are brief and highly structured. On the other hand, contesters might feel frustrated if frequencies are being used efficiently, aren't being used efficiently, sorry about that. These differences don't necessarily represent problems, they just simply reflect the variety within the hobby. And as with most shared activities, a bit of awareness and courtesy goes a long way. That brings us to the topic of operating etiquette. Every generation of amateur operator tends to feel that things have changed, and sometimes not for the better. You'll often hear comments about how operating standards used to be higher, or how people, hold on just a second. Okay, let me back up here. The Admiral just walked into the room and she had her radio still blasting in the background. I apologize for that. Every generation of amateur operator tends to feel that things have changed, and sometimes not for the better. You'll often hear comments about how operating standards used to be higher or how people were more patient. There may be some truth to that, but it's also worth remembering that earlier operators learned in a different environment. In the past, newcomers often spent a long time just listening before they ever transmitted. They absorbed operating practices simply by being exposed to them repeatedly. They also tended to have more direct contact with experienced operators who could guide them and correct mistakes early on. Today, the learning process can be quite different. Some people still come into the hobby through clubs and local mentors, but many others learn independently using online resources, videos, and digital communications, or digital communities. That means people may arrive on the air with different levels of experience and slightly different expectations. But the core principles of good operating haven't really changed. Listening before transmitting, identifying properly, avoiding interference or interfering, and treating others with respect. These are still just as important today as they ever were, and ultimately those standards are maintained by the community itself. Now let's talk a bit about licensing, because that's another area where we have seen significant change over the years. In earlier times, obtaining an amateur radio license could be quite challenging. Examinations often required a solid understanding of electronics theory, operating procedures, and regulations. In addition, Morse code proficiency was a requirement in many countries, particularly for access to HF bands. For many operators, learning Morse was one of the biggest hurdles. It required time, practice, and persistence, but it was also seen as an essential skill, and passing the Morse test was often viewed as a major achievement. Over time, licensing systems began to evolve. One of the most significant changes was the removal of mandatory Morse code testing in many parts of the world. This was a topic that generated a lot of discussion at the time. Some operators welcomed the change, feeling that Morse was no longer necessary for modern communication and that removing the requirement would make the hobby more accessible. Others were concerned that something important might be lost, both in terms of tradition and operating skill. Looking back now, it seems that Morse code didn't disappear. It simply became a choice rather than a requirement. Those who enjoy it have continued to use it, often at very high levels of skill, while others have focused on different modes. At the same time, the removal of the requirement made it easier for new operators to get licensed and get on the air. More broadly, licensing has become more accessible. Today, study materials are easier to find. Practice exams are widely available, and in many cases, exams themselves are more flexible and easier to arrange. This has opened the door to a wider range of people entering the hobby, and that diversity brings new ideas, new interests, and new energy into amateur radio. Of course, some people feel that easier entry might mean less technical knowledge overall, but it's important to recognize that learning hasn't gone away, it simply has changed. Instead of building transmitters from scratch, many modern operators are experimenting with digital modes, software-defined radio, antennas, and computer-based systems. The technical side of amateur radio is still very much alive, it just looks a bit different than it used to. Another area that has changed is the role of the amateur radio clubs. Clubs used to be the primary way people got involved, learned, and stayed active in the hobby. Today, they're still important, but they no longer the only option. Online communities, virtual nets, digital platforms have created new ways for operators to connect, share knowledge, and support each other. In many cases, these new forms of interaction complement traditional clubs rather than replacing them. One interesting aspect of all this is how different generations experience amateur radio. Operators who have been in the hobby for many years bring valuable experience and historical perspective. Newer operators often bring familiarity with modern technology, computer, and digital systems. When those perspectives come together, they can strengthen the hobby as a whole. At the end of the day, amateur radio has always been shaped by the people involved in it, The equipment may change and the operating methods may evolve, but the underlying motivations remain the same, a desire to communicate, to learn, and to explore. So as we think about operating culture and licensing, it's worth asking ourselves a few questions. Have these changes made amateur radio welcoming, or have they made it more fragmented? And how do we maintain good operating standards while still encouraging new people to join the hobby? All right, with that, I'm going to ask for check-ins, questions, comments, or personal thoughts, and turn it over before we turn it over to the next narrator. Please come now. All right, I'm not hearing anybody, so I'm going to turn it over to KE5ALF. Are you there, alien life form?
W4RFJ from KE5ALF. Thank you, Chief, and good evening, everyone. And say hello to the Admiral for me, if you would. This is Greg, KE5ALF, also known as the alien life form, resident alien here. All right, I'm going to start off with the digital revolution. While radio met computers and the Internet. Up to this point, we've talked about where amateur radio came from, how the equipment has evolved, and how operating styles and licenses have changed over time. Now we're going to move into an area that for many operators represents one of the biggest shifts of all, and that's the rise of digital technology and the way radio has become closely connected with computers and the Internet. For some, this has been an exciting development full of new possibilities. For others, it has raised a few questions about what amateur radio really is and where it's heading. So let's take a closer look at how this all came about. Digital communication in amateur radio didn't appear overnight. If we go back a few decades, we find early forms of digital operation in things like packet radio. This was a time when computers were just starting to become more common in homes, and some amateur operators began experimenting with sending data over the air. Using fairly basic equipment by today's standards, operators could send text messages from one station to another. It wasn't fast, and it wasn't always straightforward, but it worked, and more importantly, it opened the door to something new. For the first time, amateur radio wasn't just about voice or Morse code, it was about data, and that was a significant shift. As personal computers became more capable and more widely available, they gradually found their way into the amateur radio shack. At first, they were used mainly for support tasks. Operators used computers for logging contacts, keeping track of frequencies, predicting propagation conditions, and managing contest entries. These were useful tools, but they didn't fundamentally change how communication itself took place. That came a little later. The real change happened when computers began to take a more active role in communication. With the development of sound card interfaces and specialized software, it became possible to generate and decode digital signals using a standard computer connected to a radio. Suddenly, modes that once required dedicated hardware could be handled entirely in software, and that made digital operation much more accessible. Modern digital modes brought with them some very interesting capabilities. One of the most notable is the ability to communicate using extremely weak signals. Signals that might be almost impossible to hear with the human ear. With the help of software, these softwares can be decoded accurately, allowing contacts to be made under conditions where voice communication would struggle. This has opened up new opportunities for operators with modest stations, limited antenna space, or challenging noise environments. It also changed the way some people approach operating. In many digital modes, contacts are shorter and more structural. Instead of long conversations, exchanges might consist of signal reports, location information, and confirmation of contact. For some operators, this efficiency is part of the appeal. It allows them to make contacts across great distances with minimal power and relatively simple setups. For others, it feels quite different from the traditional conversational style of amateur radio. Now that brings us back to a theme we've touched on before tonight, that amateur radio offers a wide range of operating styles
and each operator can choose what suits them best. Another important development has been digital voice. Technologies such as DMR, Fusion, and D-Star have introduced new ways of transmitting voice signals. These systems convert audio into digital data, which can then be transmitted more efficiently and in some cases with improved clarity. They also make it possible to link repeaters together over networks, creating wide area or even global communication systems. With a handheld radio and access to a link system, an operator can take part in conversations with people in different countries, all through a relatively simple setup. Now this leads us to the role of the Internet. Systems such as Echolink, which we're on tonight, and AllStarLink have taken things a step further by combining traditional radio with Internet connectivity. I'm sorry about that. And these systems, part of the communication path, may travel over radio frequencies while another part is carried over the Internet. This allows repeaters, nodes, and individual operators to connect in ways that simply weren't possible in the past. It also allows nets like this one to exist, bringing together operators from different locations into a single shared space. Now, this blending of radio and Internet technology has sparked quite a bit of discussion within the amateur radio community. Some operators feel that if a signal is traveling over the Internet, even for parts of its journey, it moves away from what they consider to be traditional amateur radio. Others see it differently. They point out that amateur radio has always been experimenting with communication technology, and that using modern networking tools is simply a continuation of that tradition. And there's certainly some truth in that. Another development worth mentioning is remote operation. Today it's possible to control a radio station from a completely different location using a computer or even a mobile device. This can be particularly useful for operators who live in areas where antenna restrictions or high levels of interference. By accessing a remote station, they can operate under much better conditions. It also allows people who might not be able to maintain a full station at home to remain active in the hobby. At the same time, some operators feel that part of the experience is being physically present with your equipment, adjusting controls, listening directly to the radio, and interacting with the station in a hands-on way. Again, it comes down to personal preference. The important point is that the options now exist. As we look at all of these developments together, it becomes clear that amateur radio has expanded significantly in terms of what it includes. It's no longer just about transmitting and receiving signals in the traditional sense. It now overlaps with computing networks, software development, and digital communication systems, and for many people, this is part of what makes it so interesting. Of course, with increased reliance on digital systems and the Internet, there are also questions about independence. One of the traditional strengths of amateur radio has been its ability to operate without relying on external infrastructures. Some operators are keen to ensure that this capability is preserved, particularly in the context of emergency communication. Others see digital integration as a way to enhance communication rather than replace traditional methods. So once again, we find ourselves looking at a balance between tradition and innovation, independence and connectivity, and hands-on operational and automated systems. And perhaps that balance is exactly what has allowed amateur radio to continue to evolve over the years. It adapts, it incorporates new ideas, and it finds ways to remain relevant while still holding on to its core principles. So as we consider the digital revolution in amateur radio, it's worth asking, are these changes expanding the hobby, or are they changing it into something different? And how do we define what amateur radio really is in today's connected world? That's it for my section. So at this time, I'd like to ask if there's any check-ins, questions, comments, or personal thoughts before I turn it over to the next narrator.
Okay, seeing none, this is KE5AOF, turning it over to KB9EWG. David, are you there, sir?
Well, thank you, Alien Life Form. Yes, I am here. Good evening to you and everybody else on South Cars. Okay, thank you, Greg. What we have gained, what we've lost, and where amateur radio goes next is my section. Thank you, Greg. Good evening to everybody. Over the course of tonight's net, we have taken quite a journey through amateur radio from its early experimental beginnings through changes in equipment, operating styles, licensing, and into the modern world of digital communications and global connectivity. In the final section, we're going to step back a little and look at the bigger picture. We'll try to bring all the these ideas together and consider what amateur radio may have gained over the years, what it may have lost, and perhaps most importantly, where it might be heading in the future. One thing becomes very clear when you look at the history of amateur radio, and that is that change is not something new. In fact, it's been constant. Every generation of operators has seen the hobby evolve in one way or another. At various points in time, new technologies have arrived and that have seemed to change everything. And even and each time have been different reactions. Some people embracing the changes, others feeling uncertain about it and that might be lost. And yet amateur radio is continued. Not only has it continued, but it has adapted in many ways, expanded. So let's start looking at some things that amateur radio has clearly gained over the years. One of the most obvious is accessibility. It is easier today for someone to get started in amateur radio than it was in the past. Accessibility is easier today for someone to get started in amateur radio than it was in the past. The information is widely available, equipment is more user-friendly, and there are multiple pathways into the hobby. Someone can begin with a relatively simple setup, learn at their own pace, gradually explore different aspects of the amateur radio as their interests develop. This has allowed more people to take part, and that can only be a positive thing for long-term health of the hobby. Another major gain is the capability. The equipment and technology available today is incredibly advanced compared to what was available a few decades ago. Operators can communicate over long distances using low power, explore digital modes that can decode extremely weak signals, and experiment with everything from satellites to high frequency data transmission in many ways. The possibilities are greater now than they have ever been. We've also gained a much broader sense of community. While amateur radio has always connected people across distances, modern systems have made it possible to build ongoing relationships and participate in regular activities regardless of location. Nets like this are a good example. They allow people from different areas to come together, share ideas, and enjoy the hobby as a group, even if they physically are far apart. That sense of connection is still very much the heart of amateur radio. At the same time, the range of interest within amateur radio has expanded. Some operators focus on emergency communications, others on technical experimentation, others on social interaction, and still others on digital systems, or portable operation. There is no single way to enjoy amateur radio anymore, and the flexibility is one of its strengths. Now, having said all of that, it is important to acknowledge that not all the changes are viewed as positive by everyone. There are areas that where some operators feel that something has been lost. One of those is a tradition of hands-on aspect of the hobby. In early days, building and modifying equipment was often a central part of amateur radio. Today, while the opportunities still exist, it is no longer necessary. Many operators use equipment that works well straight out of the box. For some, this is a welcome convenience. For others, it means fewer opportunities to develop certain technical skills through the experience. Another area that has often comes up is the pace of operating. As we discussed earlier, contacts today can sometimes be shorter and more focused, particularly in digital modes and contest environments. Some operators miss the longer, more relaxed conversations that were once more common. That said, those types of contacts are still very much available. They just require finding the right time, frequency, group of operators who join that style. There's also the question of how people learn in the past through learning. So much of the learning happened through direct interaction with other operators. Today, a lot of the learning, it takes place online. While this makes information more accessible, it can sometimes reduce personal one-on-one mentoring. Experience that many people found so valuable. But again, it doesn't mean that mentorship has disappeared. It simply has taken different forms. Another topic that sometimes comes up is the balance between independence and reliance on external systems. Traditional amateur radio has always had the ability to operate independently of commercial infrastructure. With the increased use of digital systems and internet-linked networks, some operators are keen to ensure that independence is not lost. Others see the technologies as additional tools rather than replacements. And perhaps the reality is that both approaches can coexist. So where does this leave us? Is amateur radio better than it used to be, or worse? Or is that perhaps the wrong question altogether? It may be more useful to think of amateur radio as something that reflects the time in which it exists. In earlier years, it reflected technology changes and interests of that period. Today, it reflects a different set of tools, a different pace of life, and different expectations. But at its core, many of the same motivations remain. People are still curious about communications, but still enjoy learning new things. They still find satisfaction in making contact with somebody across the great distances, using equipment that they understand and control. Looking ahead, it's likely that amateur radio will continue to evolve. We may see further developments in digital communications, greater integration with computing and networking, and new areas of experimentation that we can fully predict yet. At the same time, many traditional aspects of the hobby will likely continue supported, but by those who value and enjoy them. And the combination of old and new may be exactly what keeps amateur radio interesting and relevant. Perhaps the important point is that the future of amateur radio isn't determined by technology alone. It's shaped by the people who take part in it. Every operator contributes in some way by making contacts, sharing knowledge, encouraging newcomers, and keeping the hobby active. So rather than asking whether amateur radio has changed for the better or worse, we might ask a slightly different question. What role do we want to play in the future? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are heading toward the close of tonight's program. Do we have any further check-ins, comments, questions, or anything else further than that? This is KB9EWG.
Hotel America.
Well, good evening, Fred. K2HA, go ahead.
Okay, very good. Thank you, David. Thank you for reading the script and presenting that. Thinking over the entire program, first of all, I want to say thanks to Dave over there for gathering together the crew to present it and the script. Very interesting. But thinking back over the entire presentation, it's like there's ham radio has now become a smorgasbord. There's so many different options that a person can enjoy in ham radio, and one person will enjoy, you know, designing new circuits, for example, digital circuits, or putting them together. Some people enjoy the operating, some enjoy the contesting, some enjoy creating antennas. There's all kinds of stuff. So it's almost like we have different tribes in ham radio, and they all walk up to the smorgasbord and take what they want. And, well, thank you all for this presentation. This is Fred, K2HA.
Well, thank you, Fred. Excellent comments there. And, yeah, it is a big smorgasbord, that's for sure. Okay, anybody else have any questions, comments, or anything else, or just wish to check into the net? This is KB9EWG for the SCARS TIN. Okay, hearing nobody else, before I close this, I'm going to say if anybody has any suggestions for a topic for Thursday Information Net, please email us at voip@scarsvoip.com. We'd love to have your suggestions for topics for TINs there. It sure is a fun presentation, and I'm sure a lot of people do enjoy hearing it there. So if you got a topic that might be of interest, please email us and let us know. I'm going to call one more time for any check-ins or whatever else before I secure the net. This is KB9EWG. Okay, hearing no other check-ins. This has been SCARS, VOIP. Net schedules and general information may be found on our website, scarsvoip.com, I spell scarsvoip.com. This is KB9EWG saying goodnight to all, 7-3, and now returning the server to normal amateur use. This is KB9EWG, clear.